Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
I'm going to start today with a story that probably you would expect me to start with, but it's a story that raises a lot more questions than it has answers. But here's what we know so far. Last night, Ravens safety Earl Thomas took to Instagram to post this video.
So my agent just hit me and said that I'm going to be on TMZ tomorrow from an altercation that happened with me and Nina. So just wanted to get ahead of it. And I mean, it's really not anybody's business. It's pissing me off that it got out, but it's the world we live in today. But instead of talking about this, just keep us in y'all prayers. And stuff like this happens, bro. You know, we try to live the best lives we possibly can, but sometimes it don't go as planned. Just pray for us, you know, as we go through this stuff. You know, we're back talking. You know, I'm seeing my kids. So just keep us in your prayers.
That is an absolutely amazing statement for so many different reasons. But let me walk this back for a moment. Starting with this, getting a call from your rep that you're going to be on TMZ is almost never a good sign. And it's something he wanted to get in front of. If that's the case, that's also a bad sign. But still, we are talking about one of the most respected players in the NFL. What kind of a story are we talking about? What could happen? TMZ is involved. He wants to get in front of it. But we're talking about Earl Thomas here, one of the most respected guys in the NFL. So what could it possibly be? But then we get the TMZ report, and it's the kind of story that we're talking about that's not like any story I've seen anytime recently. Because according to TMZ, police in Austin, Texas, responded to a home at 3:41 a.m. on April 13th. Didn't your old man always tell you, nothing good ever happens at 3:41 a.m.? According to the cops, when they arrived, quote, "We observed that a black female wearing an orange sweater with a knife in her hand, later identified as Nina Thomas, was chasing a shirtless black male, later identified as Earl Thomas, with a pistol in his hand around a vehicle," end quote. All right, so that's scary. A really scary situation. And then everything that came out after that is even more insane. Because according to TMZ, Nina said that Earl had left their home earlier that day after they had an argument about his drinking. And his brother, Seth Thomas, picked him up. Quote, "But a short time later, she decided to check on his whereabouts by logging into his Snapchat account. And that's when she says she found video of Earl with another woman," end quote. Okay, that's not good. That's not good at all, right? And according to TMZ, it was about to get much worse. Quote, "Nina says she used Earl's Snapchat to track his location to a nearby Airbnb rental home, and says that she called up two other women to help her confront Earl at the pad. Nina also claims she grabbed Earl's 9mm Beretta in the process with the intention to, quote, scare him." All right, so just two sentences, but so much to unpack. Like, Nina going all CIA agent to track down Earl's location to a nearby Airbnb is one thing. But calling up two other women as backup is another. And then grabbing a pistol to bring along to, quote, scare him is entirely new level. Let me say this right now. Grabbing a gun to, quote, scare someone is the first stop on a road to something really horrible. But getting back to the story, according to TMZ, when the women arrived at the house, they, quote, discovered Earl and Seth naked in bed with other women, end quote. Let me go back to something that Earl said in his statement on Instagram, and I quote, "Stuff like this happens, bro. Stuff like this happens, bro." You know, he just threw the old, "it happens. It happens to us all" card.
Happens to us all.
Yeah, except it doesn't. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen to us all. In fact, that's never happened to anybody I've even known. I don't know if there's ever been a situation like that involving anybody, anywhere, at any time. So, no. Stuff like that does not happen, bro. It does not happen to all of us. Just you, my man. Just you, Earl. I could open up the phones right now until the very end of time. Not the end of time. And I'm pretty sure I would never get one call from anybody saying that he and his brother were in bed with a couple of ladies, only to have his wife show up at gunpoint with her knife-wielding bestie rolling with her. So no, Earl, that does not happen. It's not just stuff. That doesn't happen to any of us, just you. That's what makes the whole story so insane. That's the whole point. I mean, dude, you're making this sound like, I don't know, just Wednesday. Like, it's happened to pretty much everybody at some point. Difference is, I'm a celebrity, and that's the only reason we even know about it. Correction, my guy. It does not happen to pretty much everybody. It pretty much happens to nobody. And we're only at the beginning. This gets so much more insane already. The women arrive on the scene, and they find Earl and Seth in bed with other women. Reading from the TMZ report, quote, "That's when Nina admits she pulled out the gun and put it to Earl's head, stating," quote, "that she took out the magazine thinking that the gun could not fire. But cops say Nina was," quote, "unaware that the gun had a round in the chamber." There you go. That's exactly what I was talking about. When you grab a gun just to, quote, scare someone, stuff like that's bound to happen. Imagine putting a gun to somebody's head and thinking it was unloaded and forgetting that there was still a single round in the chamber. Or not even knowing how a gun works. Or not even knowing that there was a slug in the chamber. Or not even knowing that there is a chamber or a safety or how the safety works. Just showing up, waving a loaded gun around somebody's head and thinking that you're good because you dropped the magazine from the pistol. You know what's even crazier than that? Not only was Nina rolling with somebody wielding a knife, and she had the gun, apparently Nina had a videographer with her as well. Reportedly, somebody was rolling vid on the whole thing on a cell phone. According to TMZ, this is exactly what happened. Quote, "Cops say one of the women in the house shot cell phone video of the incident, which they say shows Nina pointing the gun at Earl's head from less than a foot away, and it can clearly be seen that Nina's finger was on the trigger and the safety is disengaged," end quote. I mean, who does that? Who is rolling film in a moment like that? Who in that situation thinks, man, I got to get this on tape? We have to get this on tape so we can post it to the gram right afterwards. I mean, is that like the most insane episode of Cheaters ever? And you know somebody had to be there yelling at the woman, "Are you getting this? Are you getting this? Are you getting this?" Also, not to be this guy, but can I just jump in for a moment and say, this is happening in the middle of a global pandemic. We've got some folks that are truly violating the physical distancing guidelines. I don't recall seeing instructions that read, "Wash your hands for 20 seconds, do not touch your face, and then get into bed at an Airbnb with your brother and a bunch of women and get really nice." I'm guessing Dr. Fauci would probably not approve of any of that. Anyway, back to the story. According to the cops, Earl was able to wrestle the gun away from Nina. Police also say that the video shows Nina hitting Earl in the nose. If it ends right there, that is one of the craziest stories in a long, long time. But it didn't. There is more. According to TMZ, in an interview with Earl's alleged mistress at the scene, she claimed that Nina also threatened her and the other women in the house, pointing the gun at them and yelling, and I quote, "I got something for all you hoes." "I've got something for all you hoes" is amazing. Yeah, you do. You do have something for all those hoes. A loaded 9mm that you don't know is loaded, and a bestie with a blade, either to scare somebody or cut somebody, and a videographer to document the whole damn thing in an Airbnb during a global pandemic. So yeah, you got a whole lot of something for those hoes and the bros. Like, I wasn't even there. But from the sounds of it, Nina's friend did not exactly try to talk her out of an armed confrontation with Earl. Nina's friend sounds like she was like, oh, cool. Hey, let me grab my blade. Someone's getting cut tonight, girlfriend. And according to TMZ, the cops ultimately arrested Nina and both members of the posse. Nina was booked for burglary of a residence with intent to commit aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, and later bonded out. Earl was not arrested. Hey, look, I don't really have a good way of wrapping up this story other than to say if it's all true, that is one of the most insane stories I've heard in a long, long time. And again, these are all just allegations. As I mentioned off the top, there are a lot more questions than there are actual answers. However, there is more to this. And as we get further into this, there are a couple of questions that I do need to hit on that I would like to have answered. But remember, Earl said, it's just stuff, man. Stuff happens to everybody. Now more than ever, we need people with the right skills to support our communities, especially the frontline workers who provide resources and care for those most in need. To help, LinkedIn is offering free job posts for healthcare and essential service organizations that need to quickly fill critical roles with the people who help us all. So if you're hiring for one of these organizations, job posts on LinkedIn can help you quickly find the right people for your frontline. LinkedIn can help you find frontline workers from its active community of over 675 million members. I am one of the 675 million. I'm on the site every single day. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates for the skills and experience that you're looking for and puts your job post in front of qualified people who meet your requirements so you can find the right person to quickly fill critical roles. To post a healthcare or essential service job for free, or if you're in another industry and you have hiring needs, just visit linkedin.com/Rome, linkedin.com/ROME. Terms and conditions apply. Nick Rolovich is my guest. Nick, before we get into what the spring has been like for you in the program, let me ask you this. How are you, your wife, and the kids doing during this really unusual time, Nick?
We're all good, Romy. You know, hanging together, spending time with the family. I think it's a good reset. Maybe really focus on what's important in this life.
That's the truth, right? And I know you're keeping busy. Yep. One of the things, Nick, that you've been doing during this time is supporting local restaurants and providing folks with food. As an example, at Pizza Perfection, you bought 20 pizzas and you tweeted, quote, make sure to practice social distancing, but there are 20 pizzas waiting here for the first 20 people who come down and pick them up. You must say the code word mongoose. Thank you, Pullman. All right, so how did that idea first come to be?
Well, I bought pizza for my family. I go to pick it up, and they say we got two good paychecks. But I got people out who are struggling.
All right, so if the code word for pizza was mongoose, for Zoe Coffee, it was huckleberry. For tacos, it was wagon wheel. Where are these passwords coming from, and what do I have to do to get a Romy to be one of the passwords?
I'll get a Romy. Romy's next.
Good.
Probably tonight. I'm going to get that Romy going tonight. No, just I asked the people at the cashier to see what they want to say. I came up with mongoose, but we conglomerate about it.
I like it. All right, then, and I appreciate the Romy password too. So, Nick, if we go back to January, you were coming off a season where you won 10 games, and you were the conference coach of the year. Obviously, you had a really good thing going in Hawaii at your alma mater. So, what was it about this opportunity at Washington State that appealed to you so much?
The transition with the personnel grouping, I think, will be real smooth because, you know, Coach Leach and their raid, a lot of 10 personnel. They get a little more 20 personnel than we do, but, you know, we're all 10 for the most part. So I thought that was an easy transition. I like the mindset of that that's been kind of ingrained in the offensive and probably the fan base, too, of being aggressive, ball in the air, and the opportunity to coach in the Pac-12. In a region that I'm kind of excited to raise my kids in, to be honest. This is a cool place.
Nick Rolovich is joining us. You know, you have all that, and then knowing the love you have for the school and for the state and knowing what that program means to the state of Hawaii, I know you value that, but you said something really interesting. You said, quote, I didn't want to be complacent in Hawaii. I wore slippers. It was a great life. I was happy doing it, but I also didn't want to disrespect the place that I was at by not taking it seriously enough. To me, that's really interesting. What do you mean by that? Can you lay that out for me?
I don't know. Cause when I got the job, you know, I was, 30, 36 maybe, and you know, that was this my dream job. I always wanted to coach there. But it really shows you, as you grow in this life, no matter what it is, even outside of sports, you need to keep challenging yourself. You need to keep growing. You need to see, you know, competing to see how great you can be. And I didn't want to, you know, be that guy who just, you know, I played here, we won a few games here. I wanted to see it get better and better. And I wasn't sure I was going to be able, or we all were going to be able to do it.
So you mentioned the Pullman community, and you think it's a good place to raise a family as well. From the outside, it seems like you plugged in to Washington State and that community really quickly. It seems like you've been there for years. How would you describe that community, and then what has the fit felt like to you?
Well, that's been the real similarity I didn't expect, is it's got a real feel like Hawaii, where, you know, people take care of each other. It's a small town, real neighborly, very welcoming, very safe. A lot of similarities. Obviously, the weather's different, but as far as the people and the fan base, I didn't realize was as spirited as they are, because it's a really genuine support of not only Cougar football, but just the whole university as a whole.
Talking Washington State football, head coach Nick Rolovich is my guest. You know, the thinking, Nick, would be that spring practice is always important, but extremely important in your first year at a program. But spring practice obviously is not happening for a number of reasons. You said nobody should be crying for you in the football program because it's so minor compared to everything else. So how have you gone about responding to that challenge? What's the approach been?
Well, one of the real positives that helped me with that statement is how this team wasn't broken as far as a togetherness in the players. They, you know, as soon as we got here, they're in the weight room. The work ethic was there. The togetherness is there. We were really going to focus on building leadership and see who was going to pull this kind of, I say it, but I don't mean it as a negative, a glob of good, and who was going to yank that thing up to greatness. And that was going to be our focus, along with installation, offense, and defensive schemes. But I like the mentality of this team. I think we got there's a natural chip on your shoulder when you play here, and I kind of like that little blue collar, little chip on the shoulder, and you know, a lot of toughness
and a glob of goods. I like that. You told the Seattle Times, "I hope to fancy a team that shows they care about each other and plays hard." You know, like every coach who's accomplished anything will be talking about their offensive scheme. So, and I know you care about that too, but why is it so important to see the people in the program care about each other, and how does that translate into wins on the field?
Because you don't let each other down. You're not going to let yourself quit because you care about the person next to you. I think it's an added motivation. I think it pushes people to maybe a level they're not able to get to themselves. And that's one of the great things about team sports.
Nick, you and the program suffered the passing of Bryce Beekman in March. I know that you did not have a chance to coach him, but how have you gone about supporting your players in their grief?
You know, what made that really hard was, can't go give him a hug. I can't hug Bryce's mom when she comes to Pullman to see his body. I mean, it was just it was incredibly awkward when it's a time of grieving and it's a time to really support each other. So, you know, how connected can you get on Zoom in a time like that? Obviously, you can install, you can do homework on Zoom, but you know, when you really got real emotions, I'm not sure Zoom is the preferred way to work on those. So really try to stay connected through the position coach, through text, through group text, and kind of just let Bryce inspire us this year, and let's inspire them to be the best they can be, because he was a great kid. He really was a great kid.
We're talking to Nick Rolovich. You know, Nick, it seems it's not to be trite about this, but obviously there is no playbook for managing something like that. And especially at a time like this, it makes it even more challenging, if that's even possible. I just wonder how much things are going to change. You know, you can't go give somebody an embrace or a hug. You can't go shake somebody's hand, at least not the way we used to. I mean, do you think that we're going to ultimately return back to normal and things will be the way they were? Or are things going to change? And is maybe that a good thing?
I think we'll get back. I'm very optimistic about the future here. I think it was a good reset for us all mentally. We'll have clean hands, and I think when this thing settles down, we'll be, we'll learn a lot from it. We'll kind of, like I said, the reset on what's important in life.
You know, Nick, it seems like from the outside, you've always struck me as somebody born to coach, but we've talked about your journey in the past and the fact that you did not get a lot of recruiting love coming out of high school. You went to junior college. You put up enormous numbers. Then you go to Hawaii. But entering your senior season, it looked like you were going to be backing up Timmy Chang, and you signed up to take the fireman's test. Then he got hurt. Then you got another chance. Like, how different is your life right now if that doesn't happen?
Well, you know, the most interesting point for me is, because of 9/11, the fireman test got pushed back, and I missed it. And then I'm starting, and now I'm sitting here as a head coach in the Pac-12. It's pretty incredible to look back at for me. I would have been happy being a fireman too. I just, you know, it wasn't what I truly loved, which was the game of football.
So, I mean, where does that leave you? Do you think ultimately you would have found your way to coaching somehow, some way, at some point, or maybe not happen if these things don't break the way they do?
I would have helped somehow, right? Firemen are only working 2 days a week, so 3 days a week. I mean, right. There's got to be something else you do. But, I think I don't know if I would have been at this level, obviously, but helping out high school or coaching my kids a little bit, that would have been fun.
What's it like having the kids around and being with your kids?
Oh, push-ups every hour, air squats every hour, a lot of wrestling going on, kickball, all types of – I mean, great stuff. Undefeated in Mario Kart, all that stuff.
The best stuff. Washington State was 6-7 last year. They've got a new head coach in Nick Rolovich. Nick, great to have you back on the show. Good to get caught up. I appreciate that. And when things do return to normal, let's make sure we do it again.
Code word, Romy. Where are all those Cougar clones at? Out there, there's got to be some Cougar clones out there.
Got to be. In fact, I'm going to open it up to them right now. I love it. Good job, Nick.
Bro,
appreciate
you're the
you.
Best, brother.
Also, today is a really significant day in the history of sports. Today is May 7th. And May 7th represents a really important anniversary. It was 18 years ago today that the world was given this gift.
We're talking about practice, not a game, not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice. I know I'm supposed to be there. I know I'm supposed to lead by example. I know that. And I'm not shoving it aside, you know, like it don't mean anything. I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice?
18 years. 18 years since that rant. 18 years means that rant has been able to drive for 2 years. That rant can now vote. And as with just about every good thing, it has been overplayed, it has been overused, but when you hear the original and you really take a moment to think back and reflect on it, you can rediscover it. The rant is like a Renaissance painting. There is so much more to it that you don't even recognize immediately. And to commemorate the 18th anniversary, Rich Hoffman of The Athletic did an oral history, and there are some details and some depth that make it even better. Things that you either didn't remember or didn't know. As an example, this was a press conference that was taking place 4 days after the Sixers lost to the Celtics in Game 5 and were knocked out in the first round of the playoffs. Did I say they lost? Yeah, I didn't mean that. They didn't lose. They got blown the hell out. They lost 120-87. And that came just 1 year after they were in the NBA Finals. Sixers VP Dave Kosky said, quote, saying we lost Game 5 is being kind. I flew home on the plane with team owner Ed Snyder after that last game. It was not a matter of just losing. We got our asses handed to us, end quote. So after the Sixers got their asses handed to them, there were questions as to whether or not Larry Brown would return as head coach, whether or not AI would be there as well. Do you remember that time? There were lots of questions, and a meeting was held, and it seems like some grievances were aired out. And one of the issues was about, surprise, surprise, practice. According to Ashley Fox of the Philadelphia Inquirer and JRIB, she said, quote, Larry had no tolerance for not practicing, so he and Allen butted heads about that stuff all the time. And Larry wasn't shy about turning to a reporter after his media availability and ripping into Allen off the record just to let it be known how he felt. And Allen's a very smart guy, and he knew that. So it created this dynamic, and it had been going on for a long time. End of quote. And it wasn't just that Iverson didn't go hard in practice. It was a pretty well-known fact that AI went hard as hell in games. Almost always. But he didn't go hard as hell in practices. In fact, there were reports that Iverson would clown Brown during practice. And let's face it, AI was not exactly the cleanest eater either. So you couple his dislike of practice with his diet, and you get this amazing detail from Larry Platt. Quote, there's also a moment where he disappears from practice because his guy, Gary Moore, had Taco Bell outside in the little hallway, which was at St. Joe's. Allen goes out, downs a few burritos, and then comes running back in and rejoins the scrimmage. Quote, end of quote. So one thing not to lay it all out, or one thing not to go hard in practice, but another to leave practice to grub some of the bell. That's next level. He leaves practice, he smashes a few burritos, then he comes back to scrimmage. Rod Strickland, eating hot dogs and pizza before actual NBA games, cannot believe that AI was shoveling down Taco Bell burritos during practice. Not after practice, not even before practice, in the middle of practice. Have some fourth meal and you're ready to nap it out. But if you're AI, you're leaving a workout to think outside the bun and then run right back in and keep on scrimmaging. James Kelly wouldn't pull that crap. Ritt wouldn't pull that crap. And that's to come to work and sit on the other side of the glass. AI was pulling that crap, apparently, and then coming back to practice. But, the bigger issues for Iverson at that time were the fact that he was worried that he was going to be traded, and he was grieving the loss of his best friend. In other words, for him, practice, which had never been that important, was even less important than ever before. Like, you're going to ask me about practice when I'm worried about being dealt and I'm grieving the death of my best friend. And as Fox also said, Iverson didn't look initially like he was going to make history. Quote, if you look at the first 5 minutes or so of that press conference, he didn't go into it wanting to, like, burn down the house. He didn't. It kind of turned into that a little bit, but I don't think that was his intention when he sat down at that podium, end quote. And then history was in fact made because practice did come up and AI was not having it at all.
We're talking about practice, not a game, not the game that I go out there and die for and play every game like it's my last. Not the game. We're talking about practice, man. I mean, how silly is that, man? We're talking about practice. I know I'm supposed to be there. I know I'm supposed to lead by example. I know that. And I'm not shoving it aside, you know, like it don't mean anything. I know it's important. I do. I honestly do. But we talking about practice, man. What are we talking about? Practice?
So when he sat down at that podium, he did not go in there looking to make history, but he kept right on making it. And around that time, people were also questioning the toll that an NBA season would take on Iverson. Remember, AI was not the biggest dude around. In fact, far from it. And the thinking was, if Iverson lifted weights, or even a weight, maybe he could withstand the punishment that he was taking. Remember, this is why Michael Jordan went into the gym and never came out, at least while he played. Because he not only wanted to be able to withstand the pounding and the abuse that he was taking, he wanted to administer some of that pounding, but not AI. Ashley Fox said, quote, he was infamous for not lifting a weight. He even said it in that answer. He's like, I won the MVP bony as hell. And he was, end of quote. Remember, AI was like 6 feet, maybe, and like a buck 65. But still, folks continued to harp on the fact that if he were bigger and stronger, he'd be more durable and he'd be better. Of course, AI didn't see it that way. AI had his own thoughts on that matter.
What I got to do, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to be the biggest, baddest, strongest bodybuilder in the world. And that's going to make me the best player in the world. That's going to make me – if I can do that, if I build myself up and get a whole lot of muscles and come back in here and look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, are y'all going to give me the MVP award automatically? Will you please do that? If I come in here look swole and big and strong and tough, y'all going to give me that award, right?
My man's the greatest. You see what I mean? There are other parts of this that either you never knew or you had forgotten. What an incredible rant. I mean, it's always about practice, practice. What are we talking about, practice? How about that rant about him turning himself into a bodybuilder? And if he gives us what we want, because apparently he doesn't want that or need that, but if he does what we want him to do, will we just give him the MVP? I love the way he turns that around and is coming hard for the media. If I build myself up and I get a whole lot of muscles and I come back in here looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger, are y'all going to give me the MVP award automatically? Will you? Will you? But even that is nothing compared to the turnaround that he was about to have with one reporter in particular. Because Iverson got into an exchange with Phil Jasner of the Daily News, and this is outstanding.
Can I respond?
Yeah.
Pete, there are people who suggest, me among them, that instead of shooting 40%, if you were in...
What you know about basketball?
I know...
Have you ever played?
Yes. Have I watched...
I don't know Phil Jasner. I don't know you as a basketball player. I don't mean... For real. I know you as a columnist. Listen, I don't know you as no player, though. I ain't never heard of you as no player.
Why is that an issue?
Why is that an issue? Because we talking about basketball.
Well, then let me ask my question.
We talking about basketball.
Let me ask my question.
What? What's your question?
Suppose you shot.
Philip.
Suppose you shot.
Wow. That is an amazing exchange. That might actually be the best sound from the entire rant. Forget practice. The best delivery in the entire press conference is how he just blurts out, Philip.
Philip.
Normally, whenever an athlete goes with the you have never played the game line, it's a sign of defeat. It's because they've got nothing else. It's tired. It's played. They've got nothing else to fall back on. They can't make their argument. But in this case, I'm going to allow it. And then I'm going to love it because of how he says, Philip.
Philip.
I mean, just so cold. So condescending. And a sign that AI was rolling at that point, feeling it at that point, blasting him as Philip.
Philip.
So the way this plays out, Philip passes away in 2010. His son Andy told The Athletic, quote, when I talked to Alan for my book on my dad, he said, Andy, that was all my fault. I mean, I was just so upset about my friend, and once I got going, I couldn't stop myself. But at that time, I was just so tired of being criticized by everybody, end quote. And let me say right here, nothing but respect for Iverson. I really respect how he handled that. He owned it. He acknowledged that he let his emotions get the best of him. And I could just keep going for another three segments about the rant. That's how good that is. But I really respect the way he handled that and the way he told his son, hey, look, I'm sorry. I did not handle that well. Man, I was just so upset. I was so upset and so sick of people coming for me that I was feeling it and I let it rip. But there's so much more to that presser and that day than just the practice rant, to learning about the Taco Bell, to Schwarzenegger, to Philip. Malik Jackson is my guest. Malik, it's great to have you on. First things first, how are you and your family doing in the middle of this pandemic, Malik?
First, thanks for having me on your platform, and thanks for asking. They're doing well. Everybody's healthy. Everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, social distancing, just trying to get through this time.
Good.
Hope your family's doing well as well.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. We are. Thank you very much, and it's great to have you on the platform. Listen, last month, you and your family donated food to everybody working at L.A. County USC Hospital. Let me start right there. Where did the idea come from, and then how did it feel to be able to give back the way you did?
The idea came from I was watching 60 Minutes one night, and they had a special. This guy just called into a restaurant that was doing a segment on how they were hurting, and he bought 100 meals. And I was sitting there like, you know, I'm not doing enough. So I got with my team, and we decided to helped the hospital at LACUSC.
Now, the thing about that is you did that, and that was great. But on top of that, you are covering rent and bills for 10 single mothers in Los Angeles ahead of Mother's Day. Another great, great cause and effort by you. You made the point that it's a blessing to be a blessing. Where does that mindset come from?
Just the way I was raised. It's one of those things, you know, you're fortunate enough to make a lot of money, and I think you realize as you have this, that's not what makes a person happy. I've probably seen so many rich people taking their own lives. And so I realized it's just about helping people and giving people back in times of need. So for that, I just want to help mothers really around the country who are thinking about them, and, you know, they have help.
I like it a lot. Malik Jackson joining us. All right, as I mentioned, in terms of football, you signed with Philadelphia before last season. At your presser, you were rocking your Letterman's jacket from Birmingham High School, which I love. Why was that so important to represent like that?
I just wanted to show my roots. You know, it was one of those things, you know, you sign your third contract. It was like, you know, whew, this is something, this is a big deal. You know, so for me, I did the suit for the second one. And this one I want to show people where I was from, show the people from my high school that you can make it out to do whatever you want and be whoever you want to be.
So, I always say it, 818 for life. I'm no longer in the 818, but my formative years were spent in the 818. In fact, not that far from your high school. I went to Calabasas High School. Birmingham is a Valley High School. So when you look back on your time at Birmingham, what do you remember the most, and what was it like playing high school football there?
What I remember the most, just the friends I made. Still to a lot of them to this day, especially on the football team, I'm friends to them. We talk a lot, some every day. Just learning and having fun, just growing into myself. You know, the Valley, it's a fun place. You know, there's a lot of opportunity if you want it to be, and you just make it what you want. So I'm glad I was able to grow up in the Valley and rub shoulders with people like you and our outside of the Valley.
818, baby, for life. I grew up in the Valley, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I loved it. I love growing up in the Valley. Valley's got a bad rap. There's so much to like about the Valley. I'm not saying it's perfect.
People hate on it. It's awesome. You know, it's one of those things. I think it's the best part of L.A. You know, you can have residential, you can have party, it's 20 minutes from anywhere if there's no traffic, you know, so it is what it is.
That is, and what it is pretty damn good, and you're not that far from the beach, and you get a little more land out there, you get a better lot. There's a lot of good things going on in the Valley. You just got to come over the hill and see it. Now,
look, selling it, man. Make sure people come give us some money when they realtors sell those houses in the Valley. Come to talk to Jim Rome and me.
That's it. That's it. I'm looking out for you. Malik Jackson, my guest. All right, so you suffered a season-ending foot injury last year at the start of the season. You had played in 107 straight games prior to that. So what was it like having your season end before it even really began?
It was a very humbling experience. I'm not going to lie. I thought I was invincible. You know, you said, you play 107 or two games, and you don't get injured. Of course, you have nicks and bruises, but that's part of the game. But to go down with a season-ending injury was one of the hardest things in my life that I've been through. You know, you have to reevaluate things. You have to learn yourself. You have to be able to be comfortable with yourself and with the team as far as the train doesn't stop for anybody. You know, they're going to keep going, so they don't have time to worry about you. You kind of got to just be in your own space and be comfortable with yourself and grow and see what you want to do and see what you're going to do to come back.
You see, I wonder about that because, for instance, you're right. They're not going to stop. The train's not going to stop, and they're not going to stop, and they have to work, and then it's incumbent upon you to get yourself right physically and mentally and emotionally. But you still want to fit in if possible, but it's hard to fit in if you're not doing what the rest of them are doing. How did you approach that, and how did you stay connected to the team and still try to make a difference even if you were rehabbing?
It's one of those things. I think the coaches did a good job of keeping me engaged. It was one of those things they would say, Malik, you know, you have wisdom. We want you to be around the guys. We want you to be in the meeting rooms, you know, speak on things. But like you said, it's one of those things I had to kind of take a step back a little bit and for myself, because it was a new thing. And to see people watch what you do and do what you want to do and do what you love, it's hard. But like I said, it's very eye-opening experience, and then just teaches you humility and to understand that, you know, things are big in the football, so start learning yourself and then just be able to see if you really want to work hard and come back and do this, or, you know, no. But for me, work hard, come back just as better. Just as good.
Malik Jackson joining us. All right, so you come back just as good and hopefully better if possible.
Better.
Did it change your perspective at all for the game. Like, obviously, you love the game, but when you go through something like that, do you come out of it with an even greater appreciation for the game?
I think the one thing, you just sit back and you watch, you realize how violent the game is. You know, it's one of those things, like, as a football player, I think that's weird to say, but, like, you know, you put your neck in there and you put your head in there and you tackle people, you try to put them in the dirt as hard as you can. But when you have a chance to step back and, like, just totally disengage from it, I was surprised, you know, how brutal it is, man. I'm excited to get back in it, don't get me wrong. But football, I love just the physicalness of it, and that's one thing I learned.
You know, the other thing about that, too, was you went to a new place, right? So you want to make a good impression, and there was a lot of potential, and people wanted to see how that was going to look with you and the scheme and your new teammates. I'm curious, were you able to get in, like, mental reps and learn as an example how you're ahead of the game? Can you do that kind of work mentally, or do you need to physically be in that space on the field for that to take advantage of that?
No, I think that's what makes the pros, is you can take your physicalness and step back and just start working your mental game. And I definitely did that. You know, I was sitting there, I would talk to Fletch, ask him questions, just watch the way he plays the game. I essentially redshirted last year, so to be able just to sit there and watch him and see what he thinks about the defense, what he sees during the play, in people's stances, just pick his brain. It's the most valuable thing for me. So just got to take advantage and apply it when I start to play.
We're talking to Malik Jackson for a few more moments. And then on top of that, the team also added Javon Hargrave in free agency. So how nasty and dangerous is the defensive line going to be this year?
I think we have so much upside. And all we got to do is just be consistent. And for me, it's stay healthy. You know what I mean? And we all can just stay healthy, go out there and do what we're supposed to do and do what we know we can do. I think we're going to be good. So I think we're going to be great. You know, we had a conversation the other day. And we're all just trying to get together, work, have the same mindset during this time, but stay safe. But also, we just want to understand where we want to go and who we want to be. And I think, like, speaking on what you said before, just getting that mental aspect of who you want to be, who you are, what you're good at, what you're bad at, and work on both. So when we get together, you're refined. It's going to make everybody better.
You know, you had a piece on the Eagles website last season, and you started it off with, quote, "It all starts with my father, Jody Jackson." Sadly, he passed away at the age of 47 following complications from a stroke. What was he like as a person, and then how much does he continue to inspire you even today?
Growing up, you would say he was strict, you know what I'm saying? But now that I'm grown and I have a daughter, I think about him a lot, the things that he taught me and how he was, you know, the way I am in giving back or just on the football field or thoughtful or just taking time to think of a response all came from him. And yeah, it's tough that he's not here, but I also believe that people live on through the things they did. You know, for me, I took my daughter on a bike ride in a park 2 days ago that my dad took me and my brother on a bike ride around. So you know, he lives on, and I love him. I wish he was here, but yeah,
that's cool. That's really cool, actually. And one more thought about your dad. He served in the Army. He coached you and your brother in Pop Warner ball. So, like, what did you learn from him in terms of preparation and how to approach life overall?
Yeah, I learned that when you're there, you're there. And saying that means if you're at practice, you're at practice. If you're in the classroom, you're in the classroom. If you're relaxing, you're relaxing. And I think that's one thing that I've really taken in my career, is just to really focus, sacrifice, and go after what you want. Don't leave any stone unturned. You know, when you want to do something, know who, what, when, where, why, and go after it. So he definitely taught me how to be disciplined and just how to be tedious and go after what I want and never stop.
I like that. When you're there, you're there. Wherever you are, when you're there, make sure you're there and you're present. And then finally, during this really unusual time, you've said that you've been working out a couple of times a day, but spending quality time with the family. What are the workouts like, and what have you been doing with the fam?
I mean, it sucks because my gym is proactive in Westlake, so I pass your hood all the time. But it closed down for a while, so it sucked. You know, I had to – we did the Zoom thing. But it's been tough. But I think for me, the one thing that I learned during my process being hurt is that family is important, and you have to have a rock, a solid rock. You know, something – a lot of people like to hang on to things that aren't tangible, you know, material things or whether it be cars, money, or anything. But me, you know, I realized family is important because they keep you rooted and they're honest, and to see my little girl grow up, you know, to get this extra time with her right now when I'm supposed to be in Philly working out, you know, it's awesome to me, and it's priceless. So, you know, this is a tough time, but I'm taking advantage of it, and you know, I'm thankful.
He's already a Super Bowl champion, a Pro Bowler, a defensive lineman for the Eagles, a Birmingham High School legend, the pride of the 818, and the 137th pick overall in 2012 out of Tennessee. It's already been a great run, Malik, and you've got a lot of football left in you, I know. It's great to have you back. Great to get caught up. 818 for life, baby.
I appreciate you, Jim Rohn, man. You keep it going strong, bro. Thank you for holding down for the 818 and showing these kids what we can do if we put our mind to it.
Mike Budenholzer is their head coach. He joins us. Mike, it is great to have you back. Let me first ask you, Mike, how are you and everybody around you doing as we deal with COVID-19?
Doing well, Jim. Thanks. Everybody, family, and everybody in general around me and my world is in a good place. I hope the same for you and as many of your listeners as possible. Hope everybody's safe and well.
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that, Mike. I think we are. Thank you very much. You know, it's such a strange time, and it's so unusual because there's a rhythm to the season for the players and the coaches, and then you come out of the All-Star break, and you know the playoffs are in sight. So what's it like to go from coming out of a tough West Coast road trip and getting ready to face the Boston Celtics to suddenly having no basketball to prepare for at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's so incredibly strange. I mean, you know, I guess every walk of life, you never could have envisioned something like this happen, and certainly for us in the NBA to, you know, think you're playing Boston and back home and, you know, ready to kind of, you know, make that last 15 or 20 game, you know, kind of run and prep for the playoffs, and then you have nothing in the matter of, you know, just it felt like a couple hours that night, Wednesday night, so. Yeah, incredibly strange and challenging times, but, you know, we're hoping that everybody, you know, the country and the NBA and all of us can, you know, find a way out of this when everybody's safe and well.
Right. You know, Mike, I'm curious because, like, basketball, it's your job. It may not be your life in total, but it is your job, and it's something you love and something you have a passion for. So what's it been like to be away from it for so long?
Yeah, again, just incredibly strange. It's just, you know, it's like something that has not happened in – you know, certainly my life, and I guess probably a lot of players and coaches, you know, similarly. And but, you know, I do think hopefully, you know, we're a team and an organization that kind of preaches a little bit of balance, and you want to have other things in your life, and you want to have, you know, things you do when you're away from the court and from your team. And you know, so I guess we're all diving into some of that balance. We're getting too much of that balance and not enough of the hoops. So, you know, but luckily with family and just other things, you end up, you know, finding a way to keep yourself sane and, you know, hopefully motivated for when you do eventually come back and play.
Mike Budenholzer is joining us. You know, in terms of that balance, it's interesting. I've talked to a number of your peers and coaches around the league and how they're spending their time when they're not scouting or they're not preparing. As an example, Michael Malone says he's on his bike. Scottie Brooks has been doing some yoga. Rick Carlisle is spending time with his family, playing some piano. What about you? What's a normal day like for you right now?
Yeah, no, I guess coincidentally or lucky got a little bit into the Peloton. I'm probably supposed not to hype them or anything, but that's been incredible down in, you know, Milwaukee. It's actually still a little chilly. So, you know, down in the basement of the house, got a little workout room and getting my Peloton and some workouts and when it's warm enough, walking out on the lake. And so that's been a big part of my routine. And, you know, now it's warmed up a little bit. Mixed in a little bit of golf. They opened that back up here recently. And, you know, a lot of Netflix. A lot of time I have my 19-year-old daughter here with me. We're crushing some Netflix and some movies and all that good stuff and eating and cooking. So, yeah, you know, a lot like I think probably, you know, colleagues and listeners everywhere, just a lot of that kind of stuff.
Mike, I've got no issue with you mentioning Peloton because I've done the same thing myself on the show. I bought one before. We've had them as a sponsor, and I bought mine long before that happened. I don't know about you. I'd be lost right now without my Peloton. I mean, that thing keeps me safe. It keeps me – if I have to reset, I just go into my office and get on mine. Like, how long are your rides? I go 45 minutes personally. Do you go longer or shorter? How do you approach it?
No, so I'm up to 30. So I literally just started in probably January or February, just kind of starting to get my feet wet. And I think I got it brought to the house again, like January. So I'm like in the infantile stages of Peloton. But, you know, when I made the jump from the 20-minute ride to the 30-minute ride, I thought that was a big deal. And, you know, doing some high-intensity stuff. And I love it. Now it's been great. And I'm like wondering about the whole treadmill thing. And I've messed around with a little bit of yoga, you know, on the floor from you know, the app and all that stuff. So I'm glad they're a sponsor. We can hype them up a little bit. It's been big time for me.
Me too. Mike Budenholzer is joining us. All right, so quickly, what about Netflix? Do you have a show? Do you watch movies? What are you doing with Netflix?
Yeah, a little bit of both. One of our favorites, me and my daughter, was Yellowstone. That was like we really got into that and unfortunately went through it a little too fast. Third season of Ozark. She's actually already watched Game of Thrones, but she's kind of introduced me, and I thought I would never, ever, ever watch Game of Thrones. All of a sudden, I'm kind of, like, getting into it a little bit. So, again, I'm assuming everybody out there in the world is doing stuff similar like this.
No doubt. So, as of tomorrow, though, some NBA teams are able to access their facilities, again, under tight guidelines. Wisconsin, as an example, and I know this because my son goes to the University of Wisconsin-Madison, but Wisconsin's got a safer at-home order that's in effect until May 26th. So how do you and the team go about dealing with that? What's the approach?
Yeah, so we're, mostly John Horst and Peter Feig, John Horst, our GM, Peter Feig, and our president, working really closely with the governor here, Governor Evers, and the local leaders and state leaders, and, just making sure, where everybody feels like, we're doing what's best for the state of Wisconsin, the city of Milwaukee, keeping people safe and, trying to figure out if and when it's appropriate to open, our facility to our players. And I do think that, organizationally, we feel it's important that when it's appropriate, when the safe is, minimal or the risk is minimal, we want to be available to our players. I think, just their mental health and all the good things that come from working out and, just being around each other a tiny bit, still keeping – we'll use Giannis to figure out how far 6 feet apart is with him, spread his feet, his arms out so he can't be any closer to that.
Right.
So, it's I think we are a team that, when it's appropriate, when it's safe, we really look forward to having our players have that outlet on a voluntary basis. And we're just working with state and local leaders to figure out exactly when that is.
Hey, listen, is there any concern on your part about the fairness and that some teams will be able to get access before other teams?
Well, I think the good thing, I guess at the end of the day, the answer is yes. But I would say more importantly, and I think Commissioner Silver, Adam Silver, who I think is an amazing leader and just incredible for our league. This is bigger than competitive balance and bigger than basketball. And it's really about the health of our players. And if there is some bit of inequity or some bit of, competitive imbalance, in this case, it's more important that our players are safe and healthy and those places where they can get into their facilities. And they're doing that instead of going to, the local corner gym, with everybody else and who knows what the sanitation and who all is in and out of there. Like, you just want everybody to be safe, whether it's a team in whatever city or market and it's our competition, but more than that, we want everybody to be safe. So if there's a slight imbalance in a competitive sense, personally, I think for the Bucks too, it's that's part of the world we live in right now. We need to think about just everybody's health and that's most important.
So, Mike, before I let you go, in terms of that, the team has such good chemistry, it seems to me, from the outside looking in. And then when you go through something like this, that's what you want to hang your hat on. As an example, Robin Lopez and Pat Connaughton participated in a conference call earlier this week. Pat said the team had a great group chat going, but that Brooke and Robin were not part of it because they're the guys who don't have iPhones. Robin thought that was pretty funny. But from the outside, it seems like the team really does have great chemistry. Does it feel like that chemistry and those relationships are even more critical when you go through something like this?
Yeah, I think no doubt about it. And I think, I know I certainly am just missing, seeing people and seeing friends and having conversations and laughing and, all the things that happen, throughout a season and a day and a practice. And to whatever degree you can still, create that and create, connections and talks and conversations, I think, that's got to help people get through this. I think it's going to help our team get through it, the closeness, the chemistry. They're really, I think sometimes that, it can read it like, I'll just say it's a great, great group of guys. It's legit. It's real. It's genuine. They really care about each other. They have fun. They bust on each other and all that stuff. But it's I think going to help them get through, help us get through, and when we, you know, hopefully we do eventually play. You know, I think hopefully that'll help us in that when that time comes also.
And then one final thought, you mentioned your daughter. Let me ask you about your parents. Like, you and I have talked in the past about your dad, Vince,
yeah,
who's a legendary high school coach in Arizona. But earlier this year, when the team was playing in Phoenix, you had breakfast with your parents before the game, and you said, my mom will tell me I need to stand up straighter or speak more clearly or whatever it may be that she's on me about. I mean, like, that made me laugh out loud. What is it like when you get that kind of feedback from her at this point in your life?
Oh yeah, no, it's the best. I think, you know, you probably never stop parenting. You know, I do say, I think my parents tried to do their best and send us off into the world and you know, make our own way. But, you know, I'm guessing mom and dad are, you know, still parenting and still having suggestions and a couple ideas here and there. And I love her for it. I love my dad for it. And, you know, everybody talks about wanting to be held accountable until you're actually held accountable.
Right.
You know, if you have some character and you want to be great, you know, you actually kind of appreciate it. You're like, okay, mom, I'm going to be better. I hope the next time we talk, you don't have anything to be on me about. So it's good stuff.
Good night now.